WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back. This is Joan Walsh filling in for Brian Lehrer, who is on vacation this week. In Brussels, hundreds marched against the arrival of President Trump for a summit with America's NATO allies. Trump intensified his rhetoric, disparaging NATO, calling for countries to pay their so-called fair share to support the military alliance. Protesters also chanted, "Make peace great again," and ridiculed Trump for fomenting racism and intolerance. All of this is very confusing, and it got more confusing this morning. But my next guest, Ian Bremmer, is a reliable translator of world events, and his talents are coming to television soon. Ian Bremmer is the president of the Eurasia Group, author of Us Versus Them, The Failure of Globalism, and he hosts a new global affairs show airing this weekend, G-Zero World with Ian Bremmer. Ian, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Joan. Good to be with you.
Thanks for coming. We're going to talk about your new show first. I'm very excited, but there's so much to talk about in terms of Trump and NATO. First, I want to play this sound of what the president said as he was leaving for the NATO summit yesterday. He's talking over the sound of helicopters, but take a listen.
So I have NATO. I have the UK, which is in somewhat turmoil, and I have Putin. Frankly, Putin may be the easiest of them all. Who would think?
Putin may be the easiest of all. Wow. What was he doing setting up the meetings like that?
Well, first of all, it's true. Putin's actually looking forward to seeing him.
Good point.
Theresa May would rather him not being around. There's big demonstrations in London coming. In fact, they're doing everything possible to keep him out of London as a consequence of that.
Yes.
And of course, when you talk about NATO, given how incredibly dysfunctional the G7 summit was just a month ago, I mean, they'd rather not deal with him either. I got a note this morning from an ally at the summit saying, imagine that it used to be that we worried about Russia at the NATO summits, meaning, of course, that what they're all worried about today is what Trump's going to do. So, I mean, without question, the easiest of those visits will be with President Putin in Helsinki coming next week.
So he actually told the truth.
It happens.
Come occasionally. I saw Susan Glasser from Politico on CNN last night, and she said that some of her European sources were talking about containment in terms of Trump and the U.S., not in terms of Russia. What do you make of that?
They're playing defense, right?
Yeah.
In other words, you're not going to have a meeting with Trump that's going to move forward coordination and integration of the West. What you're trying to do is say, look, he's there for 4 years, eight at the outset, let's do everything possible. We know that the Senate just yesterday voted 97-2. That's as close to unanimous we get in this country, to reaffirm America's commitment to the NATO summit. And senators have been in touch with me saying, I don't believe we have to do things like this. We have to vote on this. So they're playing defense. The media is playing, some defense. The allies are playing defense. They're trying to get through this meeting without anything cracking up.
Well, okay then. During breakfast today with the NATO Secretary General, Trump disparaged all of our NATO allies on trade, on weak military spending, which he says the U.S. has to then support. But he particularly singled out Germany, and here's what he had to say.
But Germany is totally controlled by Russia because they will be getting from 60 to 70% of their energy from Russia and a new pipeline. And you tell me if that's appropriate, because I think it's not. And I think it's a very bad thing for NATO, and I don't think it should have happened. And I think we have to talk to Germany about it.
First of all, what do you make of his singling out Germany that way?
Well,
what's he doing?
Facts are wrong. They're not controlled by the Russians anymore than America is. They don't get 70% of their energy from the Russians. But, first of all, the most dysfunctional relationship of the United States with any ally directly is the Trump-Merkel relationship. Trump feels, I think correctly, that when he was elected, Merkel was not willing to say, yes, you won the presidency and we're going to do everything possible, work closely with you. She was fairly standoffish and deeply skeptical of Trump. That relationship has only gotten worse. And in part, it's because Germany is the largest economy in Europe, and yet in many ways they're doing the least in terms of contributing to the defense relationship. By 2024, they're not going to come close to the 2% commitment of GDP that all of the allies have sat together under the Obama administration, said they were going to do. And it's also true that former Chancellor of Germany, Gerhard Schroeder, negotiated a deal that really undermines the many allies in Eastern Europe in working more closely between Germany and Russia on energy, specifically gas. He's now chairman of Rosneft. This is the former chancellor of Germany. It's by far the most staggering case of personalized corruption and undermining the national interest that we've seen from a former head of state. Tony Blair is probably close.
Right.
I mean, even the stuff we talk about Trump and corruption and conflict of interest, we're talking about things like Ivanka getting a license to sell shoes. I mean, it's tawdry, but it's not strategic corruption, right?
Right.
So there is a real issue here. But of course, there's also a real issue that Trump said that Ukraine is corrupt and we shouldn't deal with them. He's never said that about Russia. Trump said that we should forget about Crimea. It's basically Russian. I mean, he wants the Russians back in the G7. So, I mean, clearly Trump is using this as a tactic to beat up on Merkel, but he's also vulnerable to the same criticisms.
Right. So the criticism, to get in the weeds even more, the legit criticism of this gas deal is that I believe that Russia would be able to conceivably cut off access to some of the former Eastern Bloc states. And that's the danger, not that Germany is cozying up or entirely dependent on Russia. Do I have that right?
Well, the idea that the former German chancellor would work directly with the Kremlin for his own personal gain to create an energy tie between Germany and Russia that directly undermines their allies, the German allies in Eastern Europe, on its face seems almost traitorous, right? And it's deeply embarrassing, almost humiliating for Germans when you talk to them that know anything about public policy. And to the best of my knowledge, Trump is the first American president that's actually publicly really brought this up. So again, a piece of significant truth that the German defense minister and chancellor have been very careful not to talk about, because it's a vulnerability that they have. But that's very different from saying the Germans are controlled by. The Germans have been fairly strong in saying we want sanctions against Russia because of Ukraine, because of the downing of MH17, that civilian aircraft, which the Russian troops on the ground, the little green men, clearly did. Trump doesn't care about any of this, right? So again, there's this weirdness where the Trump administration has actually been tougher against Russia on many issues, like providing weapons for Ukraine, defensive weapons, also sanctions, tougher than the Obama administration. Yet Trump personally has this really weird relationship with Putin that even Trump's own advisors in the White House, many of whom I've talked to, especially those that have already departed, they say, we can't understand this. We can't explain it. H.R. McMaster, just last week, saying, I don't really know.
He wants to be friends with him. Yeah. I don't understand why.
I don't understand why. So there's something there that obviously deeply undermines NATO. And yet we also have to be honest with ourselves that NATO isn't a very functional organization right now, not just because allies aren't contributing as much as they should, but also because they don't really have a mission. They're incredibly divided. The Americans and Turks are fighting each other in Syria. Those are two allies actually engaged in direct combat against each other in Syria. This is not the NATO that was fighting against the Warsaw Pact during the Cold War.
Right, absolutely. The former NATO Supreme Allied Commander did defend the alliance, however, this morning on CNN New Day, and I just want to play what he said for you and ask you to react.
They provide much more than just 2%. We have bases all throughout Europe to give us global reach in Germany, in Italy, in Spain, and elsewhere. They have contributed a great deal of their troops to Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria. They've bled on the battlefield with us. Mm-hmm. That needs to be recognized.
Before I let you reply, I do want to put out our call to our listeners again. Do you have a question about NATO or the Putin summit or relationships between Trump and Putin, any of what we're talking about, please call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. So how do you respond to that summary of, you know, they've bled on the battlefield for us? Obviously, it's true, but...
You'd like that to be something that the American president talks about. And he does. I mean, look, the fact is that Afghanistan is the longest standing military conflict in America's history since our founding in 1776. We're still fighting it. It's a failed war on the back of enlisted men and women from the United States who voted against Hillary and would have voted against Jeb because they felt like, you know, no one cares about them. But it's also very poor people fighting in these wars from our allies, too. And it's caused a lot of dissent. Political dissent in those countries, and for the American president not to recognize that the ultimate sacrifice has been borne on the backs of the poorest segments of our collective societies, supporting the United States and right. our political interests long term. Yes, we were responding to 9/11 and all the allies came together, but responding to 9/11 is very different than in 2018, continuing to send your kids to die on the battlefield in Afghanistan, something that Trump has continued. And that Trump has even to some degree expanded with his own Secretary of Defense, Mr. Mattis.
Well, I heard it during the 2016 campaign, and I know you did too. And Maureen Dowd had that very famous column, you know, Donald the Dove, Hillary the Hawk. There were some anti-war people who, for whatever reason, some of his rhetoric, to be fair, believed that he really would bring about change, particularly in these long-running wars. Did you ever believe that?
I thought it was possible. I mean, certainly when Trump talks about wanting to take troops out of Syria, talks about Libya being a mistake, talks about wanting to reduce presence in Afghanistan, I think there was that. But he also has people like General Kelly as his chief of staff. He had H.R. McMaster as national security advisor. You know, he has Mattis, not a civilian, as Secretary of Defense. He likes the generals.
Right.
He likes the cinematic quality they have, the steely jaw, the tough resolve. And he listens to them a lot. And so for whatever set of reasons, actually, Trump the president has proven to be considerably more hawkish than Trump the candidate, who came across as not quite Bernie Sanders dovish, but certainly much more dovish than Hillary Clinton.
Right, and much more attentive to the pain of the people bearing the brunt of those wars.
Yeah, you wouldn't have expected that Trump would be the person who would have pushed so hard to expand defense expenditure in his first budget.
No, not at all. We are also, you know, the thing that people go to, and I don't like to be a conspiracy theorist about this, but...
Oh, I knew there was a but.
I know.
What's the but? What's
everyone,
the but?
Yeah. That always comes with a but. Nobody says, I'm a conspiracy theorist, Ian. I've got a great conspiracy for you. But people do, you know, the relationships, the conflicts that you put together in Trump's attitude toward Russia and then his attitude toward Putin, people do go back to Russian election meddling and that he is doing Putin's bidding by breaking up this historic alliance, which has kept peace in Europe for 70 years. How do you respond to that? Do you tell people they're crazy?
No, sometimes, but that's just a personal characteristic, right? I think that Trump the transactionalist in foreign policy who thinks America is the superpower and so countries should listen to us. He was never going to like multilateral organizations. His orientation towards foreign policy is very much like China's, right? Which is, I do linkage. So if I'm going to hit NATO, I'm not just going to hit them on security, I'm going to hit them on trade at the same time, just like the Chinese would. They bring together diplomacy, economics, security. I mean, why would you contain yourselves, tie one hand behind your back?
Right.
So that makes a lot of sense. Trump doesn't care about human rights, neither do the Chinese, right? I mean, Trump's like, look, if I'm the big guy, I should get deals done that benefit me. China says the same thing. And he also likes the strong man, because of all the leaders he's seeing at NATO, who's the one that's going to be around after Trump is long gone? It's not going to be Merkel. It's not going to be May. It's going to be Putin. So Putin has more capacity in many ways.
And
Erdogan, that's right. Maybe, probably, certainly Xi Jinping. So, but at the same time, there is something about Trump's personal orientation towards Putin that even Trump's closest advisors don't understand. And I'm not suggesting that that's collusion. It might be, you know, sort of some of the economic dealings way back with the Trump organization.
Sure.
We just don't know what it is. And I suspect that at some point we will find out, and the Mueller investigations are likely to play a part of that.
One of the, I love doing radio, but one of the downsides of radio and the upsides of television is that you can see visuals, and I'm just going to try to give this to you anyway. The visual when Trump was going on his rant about Germany and being controlled by Russia, the faces of
at the G7.
Yeah. No, this was this morning.
Maybe. Oh, this morning. Yeah,
this
okay.
is this morning. As he was speaking, you know, the rant that we played a little while ago, John Kelly, Kay Bailey Hutchinson, and Mike Pompeo's faces looked like their orange juice had turned. They were very unhappy. So these people around him don't really want him to be making speeches like that, but they can't control him.
Yeah. I mean, the Trump administration has gone through now over 60% of their senior advisors in just over 500 days. That is almost twice the record that we've ever seen in a modern day president. There's a reason why. I mean, you know, it's a high stress job,
sure.
But you also have a lot of people that feel like hostages, yeah. Right? And that's less true of Secretary Mattis, who has a very big organization to run, is revered by his people, and doesn't have a lot of contact with Trump on a regular basis. But if you're in the White House, if you're flying around the world with him, if you have to try to give him speaking points that he ignores, if you tell him when you call Putin, do not congratulate him on the presidency that he just stole, and you know, the first thing he does is congratulate him. I mean, you probably want to hurt yourself, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, I think I have a hard time. I see people, some people around Trump I know very well personally. I think they're decent human beings, and you do feel for them. That you think they're trying, I mean, yeah, some of them are just there because they're venal. I mean, you know, because they want to make a lot of money off it. I mean, Scott Pruitt, I mean, others. But
sure.
There are people that I think really are trying to do the best thing for the country.
They believe it's sort of their honor bound to help the country in its time of need.
Yeah, and you see them frequently in these set shots where Trump is doing what he wants, and he clearly is getting the facts 100% wrong. He doesn't care. He's damaging American national interest, and they cannot stop him.
Right. I believe in that same call, the do not congratulate call, I believe we just learned this week that he called some of the people around him idiots, said they were dumb to Putin, that he was confiding in Putin about his personnel troubles. So that's an interesting sign of closeness.
Yep.
I want to take a call from Ernest in Orange, New Jersey. Hello, Ernest. You're on the air.
Johnny.
Hi.
Hello. Hi, my whole situation is how intelligent is this man that
I'm really bright.
NATO is people that suffered for us, bled with us, defended, prevent wars, and he just feels that he can insult them, do whatever he wants, when he wants. I keep saying that we've got one party, two factions. Because when are the Democrats going to get guts enough to stand up in numbers and says enough already, this man has got to be stopped? Because
I don't know that we have an answer for that, Ernest, but Ian, yes. I mean, you alluded to this before that, you know, Trump is just seems to be incapable of sort of even giving the verbal credit that an alliance like this deserves.
Yes, in part because of his concerns that multilateral organizations, even those created by the United States and nominally run by the United States, constrain the United States. I don't agree, but Trump is much more focused on the short term, right? I mean, this is not someone thinking about where America's going to be in 20 years. It's someone thinking about what are the deals that I'm going to get done right now?
Right.
How is my presidency going to look? And he also can't contain his emotions very much. And he knows these people don't like him. They don't respect him. And he reacts to that. He gets angry easily. And, you know, having a president that can't contain his emotions, I would argue is, I mean, someone who blows up for strategic purpose is a different story.
Sure, sure. You make a decision that anger is called for and this, and you have an outcome in mind.
But when Trump decided to fire Comey, I mean, I know that felt really good at the time.
Yeah.
But that really damaged not only the country, but it damaged him.
Absolutely.
His own interests. And so you have this president that's capable of doing damage to himself, inflicting harm to himself, which is kind of extraordinary for someone who is that narcissistic because he can't contain his emotions. And I think that that's a problem. But I also think that if you're a Republican running, you know, for office in the Senate or in the House, and you see that Trump has a strong 90% approval from those that identify Republicans, it would really, you know, sort of fly in the face of your own interests to publicly oppose what Trump is saying, unless you're someone like John McCain or Jeff Flake, who isn't running again.
Or Bob Corker. You're heading to the exits,
right.
And so you talk a lot. I'm going to take another call from Peter in Norwalk, Connecticut. Peter, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. So my question is, will the damage that Trump is doing to our relationships, particularly with NATO partners and elsewhere around the world, will it be permanent? Or is this going to be things that can be repaired, you know, by an actual qualified president? So that's my biggest thing that gives me anxiety is worrying that he's fundamentally changing the order of the world, and that things, you can't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. And just an observation that it just is incredible to me that so many of his supporters have flipped on their national security concerns and now, you know, see this whole isolationist thing. Thank you. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Peter. Ian?
Well, first, the last point he raises is really interesting, which is, you know, so Republicans now are saying that they don't think that the FBI and the Department of Justice, you know, sort of is doing a good job.
They don't like NATO.
And this is what happens when you have a country that's so completely divided and that division is facilitated by the algorithms driven by social media for whom the consumers of content are products to be sold. That's a real problem. It facilitates great division, and it allows the people delivering the message to really change the nature of that message effectively almost on a dime. That's not where we were 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Right.
Do I think the damage is permanent? The answer is yes, but the answer is not yes because of Trump. We need to understand that even if Trump had never been elected, Europe was incredibly divided. The UK had already voted for Brexit. The Germans were in a much weaker position. The Hungarian government was already saying, we are an illiberal force that wants to emulate Putin, not team up against them. So, I mean, a lot of American nominal allies in NATO were not acting like nominal allies. The Americans chose not to respond when Russia invaded Georgia, an associate member of NATO under the Bush administration. Cheney wanted us to, and then they all sat around and said, no, we're not going to do anything. Ukraine, same story, right? Then this time it was Obama. So, I mean, the value of NATO has been eroding significantly over the course of the last 25 years. Now, because of the Russian threat and because the economies in Europe are picking up a bit, we are starting to see more spending than we used to, but we're not seeing coordination. And the difference between Trump and another president is that most American presidents seeing that this organization is getting weaker and weaker, would not try to further damage it, but would rather sweep the disagreements under the rug and kind of ignore them and pretend it was okay. It wasn't like Obama was doing anything to strengthen the organization.
No.
But he wasn't jumping on it. Where for Trump, because Americans don't really care about NATO, and Lord knows they don't care about the United States, you know, putting troops all over the world and the rest, he's taking his populism that is his base back here in America, and he's just jumping on NATO and the WTO and the G7 and the Paris Climate Accord for glee. And so, I mean, the amount of damage that he is doing is significant, it's additive, and at some point these organizations will probably break.
I want to turn to your new show. I think the fact that we have sustained this conversation, and we have a lot of callers we're not going to get to, and I apologize for that. I think it's a sign that your show is needed. It's a PBS show. It's called G-Zero World. I was tempted to call it Gazero World, but we don't like that. It's too close to Gazentite.
Gazentite. Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's G-Zero World. I'm not going to win on that one. Just to be a little cynical, Americans tend to only pay attention to global affairs when there's a war or a real crisis. How are you going to make this show different? How are you going to get people who maybe are not only the great callers to the Brian Lehrer show, but other folks involved in this global conversation?
Because people are getting more worried, right? I mean, we all understand that even though our economy is doing better than at any point, certainly since before the financial crisis, but maybe even since the 80s,
yeah,
right? Our country doesn't feel good. It's more divided than at any time in my lifetime, in your lifetime. And I think that people want to talk about that. And they know that what they're getting from mainstream media, whether it's Fox or MSNBC or CNN, is really politicized. And also, it's really shrill. And it doesn't make them feel good. It doesn't make them want to engage more. I know people that tell me, smart people say, I can't watch the news anymore.
Yes.
And so I want to give those people something that they feel like they can watch, they can engage in. It's authentic. It's real. It has some detail. And it doesn't take itself too seriously, right? Because the world is not coming to an end. For all of the depression, we've taken more people out of poverty around the world in the last 10, 20 years than humanity ever has, getting them educated, getting them healthier. Like, humanity has never suffered less than today. And yet, in some ways, our own country, our own people has never felt worse. And we need to do something about that. So I think public television is the right place to start. And most importantly, there are puppets.
So tell me about the puppets. Every episode is going to conclude with puppet regime, and I'm fascinated. So please explain this segment of your show.
So there's a puppet Ian. There's a puppet Trump. There's a puppet Trudeau, Macron, Kim Jong-un. Mark Zuckerberg has a puppet, right?
I want to be a puppet.
I'm sure you do. And I've always wanted to be a puppet. And I think that if you want to get people, my favorite show growing up was The Muppet Show.
Of course.
And why? Because, you know, first of all, it was hugely entertaining. It was very smart, but also it told some truths. And that's what we're going to be doing with the puppets. We're not taking ourselves too seriously. They're all cute. I mean, even people that are the most ardent sort of America firsters, solid deplorables, look at the Trump puppet and they say, okay, that was pretty funny.
Aww.
I have to be able to do that. And I say on my Twitter feed, my pinned tweet is, if you're only following people you like, you're doing this wrong, I'm happy to help. This is absolutely a everybody is welcome place. 10:30 this Saturday morning, Channel 13. I hope people tune in. We're gonna have a lot of fun.
I love it when people do my job for me, because I was just about to say that. You can watch it on WNET New York and New Jersey Public Television beginning July 14th, which is this Saturday.
This Saturday.
So please tune in. And you can also stream episodes via 13.org G-Zero World.
And gzeromedia.com for all things G-Zero. You think there's a G7. You saw last month there is no G7. The G20 doesn't work. It's a G-Zero.
We're starting over.
All
right. Oh, Ian Bremmer, thank you so much. This was such a great conversation.
My pleasure, Jeff.